Hi, this is Yannick Vroeven from Parallax Pictures in the Netherlands. You're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with your host, Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 15. What would you do if a terrorist group repurposed your images? In this episode, ISIS misappropriates a photographer's important work for its propaganda campaign. Kate Winslet and Zendaya stand up to unnecessary retouching. Pocket Wizard announces a new product. Nikon releases a toy. Canon adds the red stripe to a printer. And Janet Jackson is at it again. All that and more in episode 15 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Yannick, for opening the show. And we'll have your question later in this episode. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 15 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Copyright infringement isn't at all the worst thing that ISIS has done. But we're a photography podcast, so we're going to talk a little bit about this. Usually, if someone steals your photos, there are methods by which you can get them removed. For instance, here in the United States, you can send a DMCA takedown notice, and their host has to remove it or else. The DMCA being the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, by the way. But when a UN-designated terrorist organization steals your photos, good luck with that. I mean, what are you supposed to do? Known for his photos involving children's toys, photographer Brian McCarty was surprised, as you might imagine, to find that the group repurposed one of his photos for their propaganda efforts. I mean, imagine how that would feel if you found that out. Since 2012, McCarty has been working on a project called War Toys, where he uses locally found toys and depicts the first-hand accounts of children in those conflict zones. Well, this project got worldwide attention, and apparently someone at ISIS saw it, and they decided to remove the Cinderella figurine in it and replace it with their flag. Not cool. The photographer learned of this unauthorized usage after being invited to beta test Pixie, that's P-I-X-Y, a service that helps you hunt for and combat photo theft online. But what it doesn't help you combat is a terrorist organization who steals your photos. He tells Petapixel, quote, "It was appropriated and altered. Most obviously, the bootleg Cinderella toy was replaced by religious iconography, shielded by a bubble. Granted, working on War Toys has led to more than a few surreal experiences, but this was a new level. It felt like a kick in the gut to see my intentions for the project so horribly twisted. An image about an innocent child's very real fear of war had been turned into something promoting that very thing, or at least an ideology with war and the killing of innocents as central tenets." End quote. That is just messed up on so many levels. I mean, imagine really seriously how you would feel if a photograph of yours was taken by a terrorist organization and used for their efforts, especially when you were fighting against those kind of efforts through your images. Not cool. While Pixie was able to get the photo removed from Twitter and Blogspot, among others, using the DMCA, the photographer can't exactly compel a terrorist organization to stop using his photos. And it's not like they can pay him for the use of the photo, as receiving money from a terrorist organization is extremely illegal. So that's not going to happen either. And he wouldn't even take it, I'm guaranteeing you, even if offered, no matter what the amount was. McCarty goes on to say, quote, "As wrong as it feels to see work used in this way, I can't help but smile a little at whomever made the alterations. By replacing a toy, he or she has inadvertently equated the beliefs of ISIS to a plaything. If it weren't tied to so much death and destruction, I'd be laughing." End quote. Now, hopefully all of the press this is getting will draw attention to McCarty's project and the real meaning behind it. We already know what ISIS is all about. If you're a Lens Baby fan, you might be excited to know that they've announced the Composer Pro 2 with Edge 50 optic. Lens Babies have come a long way. If you remember the original one, you know what I'm talking about. Their latest lens is a 50mm f3.2, which features a metal body and a tilt design which allows you to control the depth of field. If you need a little help doing something a bit different with your photography, maybe one of these new Lens Babies is what you need. It's available now for $425 US in Canon EF, Nikon F, Sony Alpha A, Pentax K, Fuji X, Sony Alpha E, Micro Four Thirds, and Samsung NX mounts. These lenses definitely produce something different, and they're quite fun, so you might want to check them out, especially if you're in a bit of a photography rut. I love it when people stand for something, and especially when they take on societal norms. Those people are my heroes. This time, it's 19-year-old singer, actress, and model Zendaya. It all started when Modelist magazine altered a photo of her that was shot for the magazine, and she called them out on it, saying that she was, quote, shocked, and that the photo was, quote, quite manipulated, end quote. She posted the actual photo and the one that the magazine apparently altered, and in the caption she said, quote, these are the things that make women self-conscious, that create the unrealistic ideals of beauty that we have. Anyone who knows what I am knows that I stand for honest and pure self-love, so I took it upon myself to release the real pic, and I love it, end quote. As of this recording, the post now has over 700,000 likes and is closing in on 20,000 comments. This has really resonated with people. The magazine quickly pulled the magazine and the photos, and not long after, their editor-in-chief, Amy McCabe, posted a public statement apologizing for what had been done to the photos, saying, quote, upon review of the final edited images, which had been submitted to us by an independent editing company, together as a collaborative between myself, Zendaya, and her parents, we concluded that the images had been retouched to an extent that was not acceptable and not true to the values and ideals we represent and promote in our publication. I, therefore, made the executive decision to immediately pull the issue in order to have this rectified and have all the images restored to the original, natural state which will reflect the beauty and radiance of Zendaya, end quote. All right, I call shenanigans here. So the magazine contracts with an outside company to retouch their photos, right? And they didn't give them any direction at all? Seriously? I just don't buy it. I'm sorry. That's my personal opinion. I used to publish a magazine years ago, and anytime we used an outside company for anything, we gave them explicit instructions on what was to be done, especially since we were paying them good money. I find it hard to believe that this editing company would pull in the torso of her and thin out her legs, you know, a famous person that they're doing this on, for their client, this magazine, without any direction. Why would you do that? Why would you take photos of a really famous person and go ahead and mess with their body like that unless you were told to do so? I just have a hard time believing that a retoucher made that decision on their own. I just don't buy it. They took quite a bit of weight off of her, took her curvy figure, and made her stick thin. It doesn't even look like her body. And also consider this. When those photos were delivered to the magazine by the retouching company, the editor-in-chief and others would have seen them well before publishing them and signed off on it. So you're telling me that a handful of people saw these photos and no one noticed that her body was completely different than what they saw at the photo shoot? I mean, come on. Does anyone buy that? It's possible, but in my opinion, that is severely unlikely. These people are in the beauty business. They are in the image business, and none of them saw this? I don't know about that. I just don't buy it. Call me cynical, but if you look at their magazine, it's full of really thin models. I mean, with some of them, you can see their ribs. What we do know is they ticked off a famous person with a large fan base. She spoke up, and they had no choice but to fall on the sword and make some changes. Either way, I gained a massive amount of respect for Zendaya, whoever she is. I'm not exactly her target audience, as you might imagine. Another one who isn't putting up with being retouched to the point where she doesn't even look like herself is actress Kate Winslet. Now, you'll remember her, of course, from Titanic and other movies. Winslet has not only spoken out about this issue, she actually has a no-retouching clause in her modeling contract with cosmetics giant L'Oreal. It is that important to her, she made sure it was in there in writing. E! Online interviewed her about the clause this past week, and when asked if she thinks others will follow suit, she said this, quote, it's a hope that other people might follow suit, but it does feel important to me because I do think we have a responsibility to the younger generation of women. I think they do look to magazines. I think they do look to women who have been successful in their chosen careers and they want people to look up to. End quote. Now, you may recall that back in 2003, Winslet very publicly complained that GQ magazine reduced the width of her legs, quote, by about a third. End quote. And think about the message that sends. We want you on our cover, but we think your legs are a little too chunky, and we're going to take about a third off of them. That's just nuts. And then back in 2013, she says that Vogue heavily airbrushed her face in a cover photo for the magazine. You know, it's one thing to do some touch-up work, but when you're completely changing the size of someone's legs, their waist, etc., that's just going way too far, in my opinion. I would hope by, you know, 2015, like we're in now, that we would have been past that, but apparently not. And it's no wonder that girls have eating disorders. I've got three daughters myself. You know, they see images of people they look up to, and a lot of the times, those people don't even look like that themselves. That's how crazy it is. So they have an ideal that is nowhere near correct. It's not based in facts. Those people don't even look like that. I've met a lot of celebrities over the years. I come from a Hollywood family myself, and I've been a photojournalist for a number of years. And let me tell you, few look anywhere near how you see them in magazines, on TV, or in the movies. It is all an illusion. They're just like the rest of us. Well, except for they're famous. So there's that. And as we discussed in episode 13 of this podcast, this can become an issue among regular people as many photographers either take it upon themselves to retouch their clients or they're asked to because they want to look like the images they see online and in magazines. Now, I think that's changing somewhat. It's not as bad as it was in the past. But as an industry, I think we need to look at how far is too far. There's nothing wrong with wanting to make someone look their best. That's what hair and makeup is for, right? But maybe using the liquify tool in Photoshop to change someone's body, I don't know. Maybe that's just a little bit too weird now. As poet Maya Angelou is famous for saying, when you know better, you do better. And hopefully as an industry, we choose to do better. I don't know why, but Nikon loves to distract itself with goofy things and take its eye off the prize. Now, you might remember that Nikon had stainless steel hot shoe covers, followed by the black and gold leather versions. Well, now there's a nanoblock version of Nikon's first SLR camera from back in April 1959 that you can build, if you're 11. I'm joking, of course, but in all seriousness, what the heck's wrong with Nikon? These things might seem kind of minor, but if you've been in the business world and can see the bigger picture here, you see a company that's allowing itself to be concerned with things like these little Lego-like toys and hot shoe covers rather than putting their energy into making better DSLRs and actually competing in the mirrorless arena. You know, the Titanic is going down and Nikon's rearranging deck chairs. And maybe it's not that dire, but you get the point. When you're selling cameras hand over fist, you've got time to think about toys and hot shoe covers. Not when camera sales are down and an entire segment of the camera business, we're talking about mirrorless here, is taking off while you're sitting on the sidelines with an injury. A self-inflicted injury, by the way. Is this a fun toy? Yes. Would I put one on my shelf in my office? Yes. It'll help me remember Nikon someday. Just kidding, just kidding. You know, it really kills me when Nikon does this. Every few months or so, there's another Nikon distraction. It's a toy. It's a hot shoe cover. Next, it'll be custom t-shirts. I don't know what. It would be nice if they were concentrating more on making more compelling cameras. You know, over the years, I've spent many tens of thousands of dollars on Nikon gear. Nikon D4S, 7200-28, 300-28, and on and on and on. I've spent a lot of money. A lot of money. Every time there's an update to a body in the Nikon line, it's a bit of a yawner, and I don't think anyone can really dispute that. Look, for instance, at the D7200, which I own, by the way. It was the most minor of updates to the D7100 after a whole lot of time that people were waiting for it. Not very exciting. Very, very minor update. So how awesome would it be if they announced a camera with some undeniably awesome tech inside, rather than a toy? That would be nice. In the meantime, though, if you want a nanoblock Nikon F, you can get it through the Japanese Nikon Direct website for about $33 US, or on eBay sometime down the road because we see these things end up there. You know, one of these days, we're going to have a really cool Nikon to report on here on the podcast. It seems like it's been a lot of mirrorless stuff and lenses. We haven't seen too many Nikon or Canon bodies that have been really, truly exciting. Maybe from Canon, but Nikon, not so much. And that really hurts me because I've spent a lot of money on Nikon gear. I would love a really compelling camera from them one of these days. In the meantime, though, we've got Lego-like toys to put together. So there's that. Come on, Nikon. Pocket Wizards have long been the gold standard for off-camera flash triggers. They're the triggers you aspire to, not those $30 jobs that you see everywhere. They're rock solid and rarely fail you. It is definitely the pro's choice, if you have the money, because they're a little bit pricey. Well, now the company has released a new model, the Plus 4 Transceiver, which adds a metal hot shoe, as well as new compatibility with more flashes. Looking a lot like a Pocket Wizard Plus 3, but mounted on its side, the Plus 4's new orientation allows for mounting a flash atop it, should that be where you'd like to fire a flash from. Used as a transmitter, these units provide on-camera TTL ability with most cameras and flashes offered by Canon, Nikon, and Panasonic. The company hasn't confirmed it yet through testing, but they say it should be compatible with, quote, virtually every popular flash and professional digital SLR camera system, end quote. Notice they didn't mention mirrorless there. That's pretty interesting. So once these things are out in the wild and people are using them, we'll see exactly what they're compatible with, but it looks pretty encouraging. Used as a receiver, these units let you fire virtually any speed light mounted in the hot shoe when set manually. Now remember, it's that center pin, usually it's that larger one in the middle there, that is used to fire the flash. It basically says fire. That's all it does, from what I understand. So that makes a lot of sense. Pocket Wizard says that the Plus 4 isn't a direct replacement for the Plus 3, but rather complements it instead. So it's like, hey, you look really nice today. No, okay. Maybe a different kind of compliment, but you understand. Let's move on. They recommend using multiple Plus 4s and Plus 3 units together for your shoots because they integrate so well together. The Plus 4 includes long range and repeater modes, a soft touch keypad, and a backlit LCD display as well. Now, while these aren't a radical upgrade, being able to mount a flash to them is incredibly helpful if you want to do a little bit of fill flash. You also have an option to put your flash somewhere instead of mounting it to a stand. So there's that. Now, if you're excited about these, you're going to need to wait until January 2016. And interestingly, pricing hasn't been announced yet on these. But the MSRP of the Plus 3 is roughly $150 US, so they really shouldn't be too much more expensive than those. I'd be surprised if they were over $175, $200. But you just never know. Either way, it's nice to see these new units, and they look pretty darn cool. In episode 14, we reported on how Janet Jackson requires photographers shooting her concerts not only to give away their rights to those photos, but also to only shoot for 30 seconds total. Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. 30 seconds. Come on. So I don't think anyone's going to be surprised that she wants control of images shot by her fans as well. Instagram users have been reporting their accounts being deleted after posting photos and video of the former megastar shot during her Unbreakable concert tour. TMZ reports that several Instagram accounts have been deleted after their users posted short videos from recent concerts of Janet Jackson's, presumably due to the copyrighted music heard in them. But Page Six reports that users who posted stills from her concerts have been deleted as well. And for one user, the reason given by Instagram was copyright infringement. Now, in some cases, they're just removing the photo, but in others, they're deleting the account altogether and state that it's not possible to restore that account at all. That seems a little bit extreme. What's weird, though, is that Instagram later restored some of the accounts, saying that, quote, repeat infringers, end quote, will be permanently deleted, and that a bug has accidentally caused some first-time violators to get deleted. Now, fans threatened to boycott Janet Jackson concerts until she changed her policy, and it looks like she heard them. On October 21st, 2015, she posted saying, in part, quote, hey, you guys, I've been listening. I love and appreciate my fans. I want you to know that I enjoy watching the short video clips of how you are burning it up at the Unbreakable shows. Please keep posting them, end quote. I'm guessing Burning It Up is one of her song titles because she went out of her way to emphasize that. But anyhow, she goes on to say that her team didn't intend to have their accounts removed, but that the longer video clips being posted would be a problem. Okay, so she made things better with her fans, but still hasn't with photographers. Not cool. We'll see if that ever changes. As we reported on in episode 13, SanDisk was looking to be bought out, and that's now happened. And no surprise, it was by Western Digital. The well-known hard drive maker is paying a whopping $19 billion for the company. That is a lot of money. Now, it'll take a while to get this all squared away, though, because the deal isn't closing sometime until the third quarter of 2016. But Western Digital CEO Stephen D. Milligan says, quote, "The combined company will be ideally positioned to capture the growth opportunities created by the rapidly evolving storage industry," end quote. Of this deal, SanDisk CEO Sanjay Mehrotra says, quote, "Joining forces with Western Digital will enable the combined company to offer the broadest portfolio of industry-leading, innovative storage solutions for customers across a wide range of markets and applications," end quote. You're no doubt familiar with the Western Digital name if you've ever replaced a hard drive in a computer or needed an external drive for additional storage and or backups. And hopefully you guys are doing backups. We've talked about that before. Don't put all your eggs in one basket or you may not have any eggs left. It's tough enough to be a photojournalist in an area of conflict, and a recent incident in the Middle East certainly won't help. On Friday, October 16, 2015, a Palestinian man posing as a photographer attacked an Israeli soldier, wounding him with a knife, and he was shot dead. The 26-year-old wore a yellow neon vest with press on the front and back, carried a camera, and approached the IDF soldier, stabbing him in the back and the chest. The Associated Press reports that there's increased concern for the safety of legitimate media in the area following this attack, as you might imagine. Foreign Press Association Director Glenys Sugarman said, quote, "Everybody is worried that it'll be open season on reporters," end quote. You know, I hope that sometime in my life there's peace in the Middle East. I want to go visit over there, but it's a dangerous neighborhood right now. So maybe someday the only shooting that's done there will be with cameras. If you're a Fujifilm user, you might want to have a look at their new 35mm f2 lens, as well as their new 1.4x teleconverter. The new XF 35mm f2R WR lens is essentially a 53mm lens in 35mm terms, and is pretty close to what we'd consider a standard lens with an angle of view close to that of the human eye. It's weather resistant, can be used down to a chilly 14 degrees. Now, I don't know anybody who's out there taking pictures at 14 degrees, but you can use it in those temperatures. And has a quick and quiet autofocus thanks to its internal focusing system and stepping motor. If you're interested in this lens, it can be had sometime in November 2015 for about $400 US. Now, if you own their Fujinon 50-140mm f2.8 lens and desire more reach, their new 1.4x teleconverter essentially turns that lens into a 70-196mm lens, but you're going to lose one stop of light, so that's going to turn it into an f4. Personally, I'm not a big fan of teleconverters, not only because you lose one to two stops of light depending on which one you're using, but the resulting images are usually not nearly as sharp as you would get without them. Test it out. It's horrible. Now, I would much rather crop in on an image than use a teleconverter to get closer optically, because those optics usually are not nearly as good. The lenses are designed the way they are for a reason. And when you put something else in there, just like when you put a filter on the front of your lens, when you put a teleconverter between your lens and your camera, you often get images that aren't nearly as sharp. Trust me on this. Go ahead and try it out and compare before and after. Shoot and then crop in and then use a teleconverter and see what you get. You are not going to prefer the one with the teleconverter 99% of the time. But if you're a Fujifilm user and you really want a 1.4x teleconverter, this will be compatible with future lenses, such as their 100 to 400mm lens they have coming out. You know, it's nice to see these mirrorless makers flesh out their lens lineup, and I suspect that in 2016, it's going to be a big year in that regard. I think we're all tired of hearing haters talk about the lens lineups from these mirrorless companies. What's funny is that most of them only own two lenses that are common to each lineup anyhow, so I don't know why they're complaining. They want to have that 400mm 2.8 available if they somehow win the lottery and can afford $12,000 or whatever it costs to get that lens. It's kind of ridiculous. It's funny how they complain about lenses being available that they have no plans of ever buying or using. I just find that amusing. For some, having a red stripe on their lens means pro. It shouldn't, but it does. And I'm talking about Canon's L glass, of course. What it really means, though, is that you have the money to buy an expensive lens. You know, a pro can make just about anything work. Now, when it comes to Canon printers, though, a red stripe meant nothing. But the company is seeking to change that with its new Image ProGraph Pro 1000, a 17-inch professional fine art inkjet printer, which now features a red stripe. The company says, quote, "The feature-rich professional printer complements Canon's professional line of DSLR cameras and lenses for an ideal pairing that can produce high detail, high-quality images when printed on a variety of media, creating images that look as accurate printed as when they were captured," end quote. This new printer ups the features and specs of their $1,000 US Pixma Pro 1. Its print head is 50% larger, has more than 8,000 additional nozzles, prints in nearly half the time, and uses a new ink system called Lucia Pro. The 11-color plus a chroma optimizer system uses optimized resin coating for denser ink droplets, increasing the color gamut by up to 19% compared to the Pixma Pro 1. It also produces denser blacks, has dedicated nozzles for photo black and matte black, and has an 80-milliliter ink tank size for less hassle. If you're cranking out enough prints to justify the cost, you can pick up one of these bad boys with a red stripe for $1,300 US sometime at the end of October 2015. But since each ink's color costs $60 and the chroma optimizer is $55, a full set will run you another $715. So there's that. Hey, red stripe quality isn't cheap. And remember, a red stripe equals pro. No, it doesn't. But if you produce professional images, sounds like this printer is going to keep up with you and accurately represent those. 100 million is a big number, even for Google. And the company has announced that they've just crossed the 100 million active users a month mark for its Google Photos service. This comes a little less than 6 months after Google announced the service, which provides free and unlimited photo sharing. Now, to contrast this and to show just how impressive it is, Yahoo-owned Flickr took 11 long years to get to 112 million users. So, yeah, wow, that's amazing. We've also learned that in Google Photos, the most photographed things are people, food, and cars. Nothing surprising there. The most photographed animal is the dog. Sorry, cat lovers. And the most photographed places are Paris, New York, and Barcelona. That's right, I said Barcelona. That's how you pronounce it. It's not Barcelona. It's Barcelona. Ask anybody. Sounds kind of weird, but that's how it is. Let's move on. The most searched for thing is babies, with me being not far behind. The word me, not me. No one's searching for me. Well, they are, but not me. You know what I mean? Okay, let's pretend that did not happen. Of its photo hosting service, Google says that it has allowed users enough space to fill up a 16 gigabyte memory card with photos every single day for 637 straight years. So yeah, I'm thinking that you're not likely to ever run out of photo storage, even if you're into the spray and pray technique, which hopefully you're not. Today's listener question comes from Yannick in the Netherlands, who recorded his question via our voicemail widget.
Hi Sharky, I have a question about photo management. My photo library is growing huge from all the shoots and slowly but surely is becoming unmanageable. How would you recommend to archive your shoots and keep Lightroom clean? Thank you.
Thank you so much for your question, Yannick. I really appreciate it. Lightroom, as you know, runs so slowly, even with a brand new library. That's why I've suggested that it might be time for Adobe to put some resources into completely rewriting the code for Lightroom and make it a lot speedier. Actually, just make it speedy. It's not speedy right now. After all, Lightroom isn't just for processing your photos. It's for quickly going through them and finding out which ones you want to process. And if you can't do that quickly, it wastes a lot of time. And time is money, as we know. And if you're spending more of it than you need to wait for photos to render so you can consider them, that's a problem. I don't know how many different shoots you're doing or if you need to be able to search the entirety of everything you've ever shot. But if you don't, what I recommend doing is creating individual Lightroom catalogs for each shoot. With Lightroom being as turtle slow as it is, individual catalogs are a lot more manageable for it. Rather than having Lightroom deal with hundreds of thousands of photos in a ginormous catalog, you've maybe got 1,000 photos or so from a sporting event or a wedding or so to deal with. So make a catalog for each shoot and have Lightroom worry about just that catalog. That'll be a lot quicker than forcing it to manage everything. Which brings me to a tip. When you're done working with a catalog and you don't think you're likely to be dealing with it for a long, long time, delete the previews that Lightroom has made. You'll often free up gigabytes upon gigabytes of hard drive space that way. I don't think a lot of people know that. Their hard drives are filled with gigabytes of images that they're never going to look at again. We're talking previews, not the originals. You got the originals and you've got the previews. You don't need both. You can always delete the previews and then later on go ahead and have those rebuilt. So if you ever want to go back later and revisit those photos, just rebuild them at that time. And remember, you're only going to be looking at the selects again. You're probably not going to be looking at all 1,000 photos or so that you shot. So that is going to be a lot more manageable. So for instance, if it's a shoot of a soccer game, you're only looking at 50 photos. You're not looking at 1,000 of them. So consider going to individual catalogs and force Lightroom to work less hard. It really can't handle a ginormous catalog anymore. It just can't. Not until Adobe completely rewrites it. And I think that's going to be in the future. We'll see. Maybe we can move that along a little bit here. Be vocal and let them know that you want a faster Adobe Photoshop Lightroom, because right now it is turtle slow. Now, as for archiving your past shoots, and it could be years and years worth of them, you could break out each of those shoots into its own catalog if you have time, but that is so time consuming. But if you're not likely to go back and look at those photos again, just don't bother with it. What some people do is pick a date and start fresh. So since 2015 is nearly over now, maybe what you want to do is keep doing what you're doing now and then have a catalog, which is everything you've shot through 2015. So it could be, you know, 5, 6, 7 years worth of stuff. And you know that everything from, let's say, 2009 to 2015 is in that one catalog, which you hardly look at, but you know that everything is right there. And this way you can more easily remember where your photos are. Then starting with January 1st, 2016, you could do a one shoot per catalog system, or even just do it by month. That's what I do. So since we're in October 2015 as I record this, everything I shoot this month goes into one catalog from October 2015. That way I have just 12 catalogs per year to manage. Now, if I was shooting a lot more, like when I was a full-time photojournalist, I might break it up a lot more than that, because that's still a lot of stuff per month. But this way, it depends on how you shoot. This will be a lot more manageable. I thank you so much for your question, Yannick, and I hope that helps you out. I think the best way to go is to break them up into individual shoots or by month until we get a complete rewrite of Adobe Photoshop Lightroom and things are a lot speedier. Maybe you can eventually handle hundreds of thousands of images, but right now, not so much. If you too would like to have your question answered here on the podcast, hit petapixel.com/podcast and look for our voicemail widget or give us a call at 206-333-9308. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 15 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the podcast, or you can call us at 206-333-9308. Now, if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm at LensShark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 16. Well, it's f8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.